What do you do on the front end to vet the deal to make sure you're not upside down? So in the instance of this guy flipped a house, wasn't a contract, lowered the price again, if he's getting to the point where he's not even going to break even, he may lose. Well, if your first position loan, if the house is worth less than what you've got on it, that is your problem.
Yeah,
sure. How do you mitigate that?
I only loan to people that I know. I'm not going to loan to random people. Mm-hmm. When I first started doing it, I had a long process of like, show me your costs, show me the address, show me the comps, all that. I went through that. I got a guy now that I don't do it with. Mm-hmm. We've done 15, 20 houses with him.
He knows his stuff.
He knows his stuff. Yeah. I don't worry. This last guy, I did all that stuff. So what I'll do is I'll say, send me the address. I'll run the comps. I'll say, how much work do you need to be done? Send me your cost there. So I'll give you a great example. There's a guy that I've tried to work with a couple times, a young guy. He's in his 20s. He's a killer. He's great. For a young guy that's flipping houses in their 20s, it gets really difficult for them to not go after every deal. Or was going to buy a house, wanted the money. I said, hey, send me the comps, send me the pictures, and then also send me what you're planning on doing. So I look at the thing, and I've looked at it enough to know I'm not an expert. I'm not Blake Schultz. I don't understand it like you do, but I got probably a second level understanding where you're probably third or fourth level. And I looked at the numbers like, hey, dude, these four numbers don't look right. Like, I know windows are more than this. And I know that this is going to cost. It's going to cost more than this for. I don't even remember what the four things were. He's like, I think I'm pretty good. He's like, well, he said, well, I'm meeting with the contractor tomorrow, and I'll call you. I was like, oh, great, just call me in the morning. It's 10 o'clock the next morning. He says, yeah, bro, it's going to cost $20,000 extra. And I go, what are you going to do? He's like, I'm going to go back to the buyer and see if they take $20,000 less. It's like, okay, great. I said, we'll roll then. I said, hey, by the way, what were the things? I was right on three of the four of them. Not to hurt my arm, pat myself on the back, but like I just knew that those numbers didn't sound right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, $7,000 for windows. No, bro. No. You're looking at 15 or 20. Whatever. Mm-hmm. And so we go through that, and he walked away. I was so proud of the guy. He walked away because when you get that deep into it, Blake, you know how hard it is to make. I'll make it work.
Yeah, no, you spent so much time.
Yeah. And so he walked away. Super proud of him for doing that.
Yeah.
So all that being said, like the lending part for me is great. We started a fund. We were doing so much lending out of my own money that I started – my Aaron said, hey, why don't we start a fund and just gather some people's money? So we had about, I want to say, $600,000 that we gathered from random people, and we're giving them a 10 to 12% return compounded quarterly, so it's great. Mm-hmm. We're making 15-plus, so we're taking the spread.
Yeah.
And we've got over $1 million in it now just because of the interest we made. Mm-hmm. And so it's been great. I love a fund.
That's awesome. What's the goal for it? Continue to grow with more investors? Or you like where it's at?
Yeah, I think that you got to be careful. So let's talk about how you have to be careful with a fund. You have to be careful with a fund because you don't want to just – I don't want to get $500,000 from Blake and $300,000 from Johnny and $400,000 from me. So here I've got $2 million in the fund, and I only need 1.2.
Mm-hmm.
I got 800 grand sitting there not working. So you hear the term all the time from hedge funds. They've got capital to deploy.
Yeah.
So I asked a friend of mine, Scott Olson, who was on our podcast, who's bought and sold companies and made gazillions of dollars. I said, what does this mean, Scott? And he looks at me and he says, money has to be out and working in order for it to make more money. He said, if it's just sitting there, in a lot of ways, you are losing money.
It's like a machine.
It's just like a machine. You have to work. The money has to be in circulation. And I tell the story about this all the time. There's three things that have to be moving in order to survive. Number one is blood. The blood in our body has to constantly circulate in order for it to be productive in our bodies. Circulation stops in a finger. What happens? You got to cut the finger off.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Water. Water has to continually circulate. Water in a stagnant pond is diseased, dead water. The water in a river flowing from a mountain is clean, pure water.
Mm-hmm.
The third thing is money. Money has got to circulate in order for it to make more money. Cody Sanchez says it all the time. Your money's got to go out, but when your money goes out, it has to bring back friends. Mm-hmm. So money has to circulate. And so that's why you have to be careful with a fund. For if you called and said today, hey, T, I got $1 million that I want to put in the fund, I'd be like, hey, dude, I can take $500,000. Because I don't want to have too much in there that's not working, because you're expecting a 10 to 12% return on that money. And if I ain't making 15 or 13 or 14%, I'm in the red.
Because is that a guarantee I'm going to get that back?
I guarantee that you get that money back. I'm guaranteeing that if you commit for a year, it's a 10%. If you commit to three, it's 12, 2, 11.
Yeah.
So I'm guaranteeing that because I know that I'm going to make 15 to 17% on the money
right
throughout the year. And we are cycling that money. Like I think we have 50 grand in, out of the $1 million in there right now.
Yeah.
So we're cycling it pretty good right now. But if, again, if you call and said I got 700 grand, I'd say I can take $400,000 or $500,000.
Yeah.
Because I can deploy more of it. I just can't deploy another $1 million right
yeah.
now.
Yeah. And you know you got to pay out on a million.
And I know I got to pay out on that money.
yeah. So which would dilute the overall return.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yep.
So growth on that is, it's kind of the what comes first. Because if you gather more investors too quickly, you don't have the funds to support sure. them. If you get too much funds too quickly, then it dilutes all the return.
It's just so. Like any business, Blake. You have to be, growth is expensive. And mm-hmm. you have to be careful on how fast you grow. Businesses that grow too fast fail.
Yeah.
Businesses that grow too slow fail.
Yeah.
So it's a fine line of like, you know, can you stay where you are? I can stay where I'm at and be just fine. It's like the, you know, the guy that owns the HVAC business makes $75,000 a year. Mm-hmm. He can stay just like this, keep the same 3 employees, keep the same trucks and grow and make the 75 grand a year and be just fine.
Yes.
This is not a, like, I'm putting all my effort into this thing right now. This makes us money. It's just slow and controlled. And I go from there. I'd love to raise some more money, but I got to be strategic about how I do that.
Yeah. Got to have a place to put it.
Yep.
Yeah. Before we get into the infinite banking concept, I kind of want to wrap up with that. Yeah. I want to kind of jump back real quick. So we didn't talk about what the future of real estate for you
sure.
looks like. Is there a growth pattern there? Or are you good with the apartments you've got? And just because you in the beginning of this podcast, you said right now, past 2 years, I'm focused on the infinite banking concept yeah. and that side of it.
Real estate. I want to continue to buy more apartments. Mm. Me and my partners have looked a lot on buying apartments. It's just really difficult right now. Things are really inflated by price, and interest rates are high. So, yeah. like, the math don't math.
Yeah.
What people want is a little too much, and the hard part is you have to be patient in that game. You've said it, I've said it, everybody's said it, ever been on a YouTube video, you make money when you buy, not when you sell. And so you got to buy it at a correct price because you don't – I'm going to be honest with you. I don't have to cash flow thousands and thousands of dollars a month. I don't need this money to pay my bills. And so if I can invest $200,000, $300,000, $400,000, $500,000 in an apartment complex, I want to not lose money. I want to have a little bit of cash flow to pay for expenses and then move on from there.
Yeah.
So am I looking? Yes, I am absolutely looking. But am I like dead set on having something in 6 months? No, I'm going to be very, very patient and go from there. So
cool.
Yep.
You want to buy a 10 unit?
Not where you got it.
All right, so on that topic of real estate, before yep. we switch over, biggest mistake you've ever made in real estate investing?
Never be second position. There's 3 rules that me and my partners have come up with. Number one is never do a deal with someone that's not putting their own money in the deal. Number two, never do a deal with someone you hadn't met face-to-face. Sounds really weird, but it's
yeah.
it fits.
Very common.
Number three, never take second position.
All right, explain second position.
Second position. So you own that house in Hoover, mm-hmm. okay? You're going to borrow $300,000 from the bank, okay? But you're going to renovate the house, and you're going to put another $200,000 in it, mm-hmm. okay? But the bank's only going to give you $300,000 or whatever, okay? So you then turn and go to me, and you say, T, I need to borrow $200,000 to renovate this house. I'm not going to be first position because first position is where the first position is the person that owns the house if you default. Second position is I get what's left over if the house gets sold. So I was second position on a couple deals, and it bit me in the butt. We lost all the money so far. We're still working to try to get it back, but we've been over a year and we've lost the money. And I realized how bad of a thing that was. I was young. I was silly in the thinking, and I thought that everyone did business like I do, and they don't, bro. Mm-hmm. Never, ever do second position on a deal. Because if you're never give money for someone to renovate the thing unless you have something to collateralize it with. If you don't have anything to collateralize the money that you gave Johnny or TJ or Susie, you are begging for a disaster.
Mm-hmm. So would that collateral have to be the house, or could you tie it to anything?
You could tie it to something else. You could. Mm-hmm. But the problem with that is if you're dealing with that asset and they default on that asset, you're not going to recoup the money on that asset. And that's the thing that matters. If you cross collateralize, and we did, you cross collateralize on something else, the litigation process of that is so deep. Don't get complicated with it, this stuff. Be first position or no position. And I've had things, Blake, I had a girl in Homewood call me 6 months ago and said it was 20% over 2 months. And I was like, oh, babe, I'm sorry. I'm good.
Yeah.
She's like, I heard that you do these deals all the time. I was like, I used to. I don't do second position anymore. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
It's just not worth it. Mm-hmm. No amount of money is worth it. And they can say, well, you can hold this or hold that. No, I'm good.
Yeah.
First position or anything. So with our fund, all we do is first position loans. So I am mm-hmm. the bank. Banking is the number one business in all of the world.
Mm-hmm.
In Trustful, Alabama, in New York City, in Mumbai, India, banking is the number one business in all of the world. And if you can be the bank, you may bank the money a little bit slower, but you're usually always going to make your money.
So following those three rules you started out with, so when you go fund a flip for somebody, it's not 100% purchase plus renovation mm-hmm. or no?
It's really, really close.
Okay. But
a lot of times flippers will want all the money.
Yeah.
And I'm totally, and it depends on if I know you.
Right.
Like I had a random guy come and ask me for it, like how much money are you putting in? He's like, I'm not putting any money in. I'm like, I'm good.
Yeah.
These guys that I know that I've done business with for years, I'm good with that.
Yeah. Which shows how important the relationship is. It's everything.
So important. Right?
What's the advice to the borrower who's looking at a project, maybe hasn't bought anything yet, but is going down the path of needing to ask for second position money? Is there advice you can give them before they make the purchase to avoid that?
If you have to ask for second position money, there's not enough margin in the deal. Does that make sense?
Yeah, the deal's not good enough.
The deal's not good enough. If I can't get enough money on to take the home, flip the home, with just those dollars, there's not enough meat. There's not enough meat on the bone, in my opinion. Now, look, somebody's gonna go out there and prove me wrong. I get that because people do second position all the time. It ain't for me. It's just not a deal for me. My advice on anybody getting into this business of flipping is make sure you are over marginalized, because time is your worst asset. Because when you flip, most of the time you're not doing all the work yourself. When you flip, you have to depend on other people. Other people's schedules are going to come before your schedule.
Mm-hmm.
And when other people's schedules come before your schedule, it becomes, at that point, it becomes a race of, like, who can get the thing done first. And time is money. Like, for example, I told the guy that we got the loan out for now, I told my partner, I was like, hey, dude, he gets to, I think, September 1, it goes up another 2.5%. He's like, yeah, I know.
Yeah.
At that point, because the guy had a run-in with the city inspector. And the city inspector, he says, kind of a hard tail. And you should have known that going in. Like, mm-hmm. Now, he's not mad at us, and we're not mad at him, but it's just the way it is.
Yeah, price of business sometimes.
So.
I just sold a flip to a contractor investor of mine that's a client. And he the seller wanted a month after closing to stay into the house. And so we wouldn't get to start work. He wouldn't get to start work until a month after buying it. Adding on to that advice to someone getting into the flipping business or investing business is don't ignore those soft costs. Because we looked at it. He called his lender. He's using a bank. He said, well, it's going to cost me $2,300 per month to hold this house.
Yeah.
And so go back to him and say, we're willing to do that, but you're costing me $2,300.
Yep.
And so we need to lower the price by that much or have some kind of concessions to where that's built in, because that's
Just pay him rent.
Yeah.
In that situation, the guy just needs to pay the rent.
Yeah. They ended up saying, you know what? We only need 3 days. Imagine that.
Wow.
So, and then anything after 3 days is $100 a day.
$100 a day. Yeah.
So, anyways, that don't ignore those soft costs, right? You got your window, your flooring, your paint. You can measure that. The soft costs, you can't ignore.
You can't measure.
Because it can be significant, 15, 20%.
And here's the thing. This sounds so cliche, but time is money.
Yeah.
And every day that you go is another however much in interest mm-hmm. to either the lender or to whatever you can get. I mean, because here's the thing. There's about a 3 or 4 week window in there in June of 2021, when interest rates went from here to here.
Mm-hmm.
Bro, I missed it by like 6 weeks. No, we did. We sold the house in August. If we sold the house in June, we would have made $30,000 more, man. Because of interest rates. They shot up so fast, so quick.
Yeah.
So, and that was the hard part of what hurt us.
Yeah. Switching to our last little segment.
Yeah.
Infinite banking.
Mm-hmm.
So we've talked a little bit about it. Give me a quick overview. What is it? And then let's get into the details.
Infinite banking is a concept where you use cash value life insurance, whole life insurance, in order to store and invest cash as a savings vehicle. So let's talk through this. So there's a bunch of different ways we can go to California. We can go by plane. We can go by bike. We can go by car. What's the most efficient way? It's
plane.
A plane.
Yeah.
Okay. So this is an extremely efficient way for us to store cash in a savings bucket. Here's the thing. It's not an investment. It is a savings vehicle. It allows us to have cash in a spot that grows uninterrupted compounding. It grows tax-free. It's creditor protected. if I could wave a magic wand and give you a savings account that did that, you'd probably sign up. Mm-hmm. Okay. So what that does is it is the leg of a stool that you don't need to have all your eggs in this basket. Like, I'm a market guy. Like, I invest in the market every month. I've got real estate dollars and I've got IBC dollars. Mm-hmm. Like, it's a part of the stool. It's my safe bucket that I can use that money for whatever it is I need. So, like, I use that money for business stuff, like in my food business. I use that money to lend. Like, I got a loan out right now. Matter of fact, the guy that I'm talking about, that guy that had the hard inspector and went a little too long, that's where that money came from. It's my IBC account. So what we do is we have whole life insurance. So we, instead of buying term, so the whole process of buying term life insurance is I want to have as much benefit, much death benefit as possible for the smallest amount of money. So with Infinite Banking, what we do is we buy as little a death benefit as possible in order to put as much cash as possible in that policy. Because the insurance company takes that money, they give me a guaranteed rate of return, and they also take that money and they go do whatever they want to do with it. Mm-hmm. Okay, we put a small amount of money in the death benefit, and then we load a bunch of cash in the policy as well, and it gives us all those benefits.
Okay, so let's kind of give me some examples of numbers of return. So there's a guaranteed return, just like a savings account at a bank.
Yep,
but it's, I'm assuming, a lot bigger.
Not a lot, but it depends on what you like. For right now, savings accounts are getting 3.5%, 4%, 4.25%, 4.5%, anywhere from 3.5%, 4.5%.
Okay.
But traditionally,
I guess I was thinking checking account where it's like less than one.
Yeah. But over time,
The
average rate for a savings account over the last 15 or 20 years is like 1%, 1.2%. Okay. The guaranteed rate we have is 4%. Mm-hmm. You also get a dividend. What is a dividend? A dividend, it's a mutual insurance company. So be careful. If you do Infinite Banking, you have to be a part of a mutual insurance company where we, Blake and Thomas, are the owners, not a stock insurance company. Because the stock insurance companies, their whole goal is to get the stock price high. Mutual insurance companies are, we are the owners, and so we get a dividend. So the more we have in that, the larger the dividend, which is super obvious, okay? So we get a 4.5%, I say a 4% rate plus a dividend. The dividend crushes as time goes on. So we get that rate that's guaranteed. Here's the thing about that is, when I have 4.5% in a savings account, anything I make in a savings account, I'm getting taxed on that amount. Mm-hmm. Okay. I don't have to pay taxes on this money that grows in here because it's an insurance product. It's not a savings product. It's an insurance product, not an investment vehicle. Anything that's deemed investment, I have to pay taxes on the gains. I do not have to pay taxes on these gains, which is a wonderful, wonderful quality for this product. Mm-hmm. So.
Okay. Best use of it, right? So a savings account, I've got cash sitting there at a bank, and I need to go buy a car.
Yeah.
Right. Great. So I go take that cash out, buy the car, own the car free and clear.
Yep.
How's that different?
Everything you buy, no matter what it is, you're financing it. You're either borrowing the money from somebody else and you're paying them to use that money, or you're losing the opportunity cost on that dollar you pulled out of your savings account that you could have been making interest on. Mm-hmm. Everything we do is financed. So what we do, like in Infinite Banking, what you would do is you'd have that money in that account. Say you had $100,000 of cash value. Say your car you have a $50,000 car. In a savings account, you have $100,000 in your savings account. You pull 50 out. Your interest is growing on what?
50.
Yeah. In an IBC account, you have $100,000 in your account. You borrow 50 from it. You're still earning on 100. You never lose that compounding. Now, just like in your savings account, when I go buy a car, what am I going to do the day after I buy my car? I'm going to go refill that bucket anyway. So it's the same process we're going to do there. We're just going to refill that bucket whenever we get a chance. And the good thing about it is I don't have a timeline. Now, I do have to have a small interest payment. I have to pay on the money I borrowed, but I don't have a timeline. Okay, and that's a daily average of balance interest rate as opposed to a compounding interest rate, if that makes any sense. So that's the major difference. Mm-hmm. Okay. The way this thing works, and the people that are a handful of people that this concept is good for. Number one, it's a business owner. Business owner has expenses. For you, for example, if you were ever going to buy equipment for the rental business that you own, okay, I know you lease it and finance it at 0%. That's great. But if you're ever going to buy equipment, this is a great tool to have in the tool belt. Mm-hmm. Okay, I think it's the golden goose of house flippers. I really, really do. I think it's a wonderful, wonderful thing for house flippers, because if you're doing hard money and you're a house flipper and you're doing hard money, which most of the house flippers I know do hard money or bank money. Mm-hmm. If you're doing house flipping with an Infinite Banking account, you can make that interest up in 4 or 5 years, and you can be recapturing all that interest with your own account as opposed to paying a hard money person. Those are great. And then high income earners, meaning W-2s, meaning high income W-2, meaning like doctors, lawyers, dentists, those guys that have excess cash that want to set themselves up for having a place to store that excess cash is a wonderful place. So those are the three people. And investors, any kind of investor. Mm-hmm. I said house flippers, but any kind of investor. Those are great people to have these accounts.
Yeah. Last time we talked, and you just mentioned you use your IBC account to lend out of,
yeah.
And that's the investing side, which is interesting because I've told you I've done a little bit of that, but not out of that account. And so I like that idea because you're earning interest in two places. That money, that same dollar is earning interest twice,
yep.
Basically.
Yeah. So I got two. Let's just use the $200,000 example. $200,000. I'm making 4.5% plus a dividend on that money, and then I loan it out to Johnny, and he's paying me 15%. Okay. Mm-hmm. Say he pays me 15% over 6 months. Mm-hmm. Okay. So my own money's earning over here. Okay. But I'm also earning over here. Now let's take, Thomas, you got to pay interest on the money that you borrowed. Yeah, I do. Mm-hmm. So it's earning on 4%, but the 4% it's earning on is on earning on $200,000. Mm-hmm. I borrow 100 from it. I pay interest on the 100. Mm-hmm. Okay. So if I have it out for 6 months, for example, I'm only going to pay 2% on that $100,000. Does that make sense?
Okay. So it's 4% annual on the money you borrow.
Yep. So I'm only going to pay 2% on that $100,000, but I'm going to make 15% in 6 months. And even if it was a year, I'm going to make 15% over here.
Yeah.
So the spread there is unbelievable.
So ignoring the opportunity cost, if you just go borrow this money with no intent to pay it back at a year plus, you're losing. But that's not the intent for it.
No, that's not the intent for it. It's just, again, you want to treat this thing like a savings account because that's what it is. It's a savings vehicle. You're always going to pay your savings account back. Now, to your point, depending on what the cash value is and how much you borrowed, would you be losing money? You'd lose some, but you're earning on the large amount, not the borrowed amount.
So I guess that what I just said only applies if you pull 100% of it.
And you're never going to want to pull 100% out of it.
Right.
But you can, but you're never going to want to.
Gotcha. So, okay, so you always have that offset.
Yeah.
So
one of the things that we do, Blake, with everybody that we work with on IBC is we are a group that walks them and coaches them through the whole process because this is not easy.
Right.
Infinite banking is caught, not taught, meaning you got to catch it in your mind. And a lot of times it takes people years to understand fully, okay, I can do this with this money. And so what we do is anytime someone wants to make a policy loan or wants to do something, they call us and say, hey, what about this? How does this sound? Great. And we coach them through it. At some point, they will not want or need us, but we're always there to coach them. Whereas some people, pat them on the butt, give them a 1-800 number and say, go on about your business.
Yeah.
We're there to teach people and coach people because it's not your job to learn the ins and the outs of this concept. Mm-hmm. Because it's not, for some people, it's not easy. For some people, they get it, they read the book and they get it. But for some people, it's pretty complicated. So that's why we're here.
Yeah. So. Awesome. Do you have a group name?
I work with Nallon Associates in Homewood. Okay. Justin Kraft's the president. Yeah. Wonderful, God-fearing man. He and I played ball at UAB. We didn't play together. We were two ships passing the night. He was leaving as I was getting there. Mm-hmm. But he's the one that started that. He didn't start the group, but he's taken over the last 20 years. Mm-hmm. And the guy that invented the concept of infinite banking, Nelson Nash, taught him. Nelson was from here in Birmingham, mm-hmm. and lived in Birmingham and spent 10 years with Justin teaching him how to do this. And we do as much of this stuff as anybody in the country, and it's pretty awesome.
That's awesome.
So, yep.
Cool. All right, before we wrap up, I want to get some recommendations from you. Reading anything right now that...
Everything I'm reading right now, Blake, is fine. I don't have anything on my desk that's wonderful. I will say anytime someone asks me about a book, I give them two or three things that I think are the best books I've ever read. Number one is The Wealthy Gardener. Mm-hmm. It's probably the best book I've ever read. You got to take the Bible out. Everybody, that's kind of the Sunday school answer.
It's forgiven,
yeah. But The Wealthy Gardener is a wonderful book. Yeah. The Circle Maker by Mark Batterson is wonderful. It's a wonderful book. It's about prayer. It's a great, great book. If you love Jesus and have a relationship with Jesus, it's a wonderful book. And Andy Andrews wrote a book called The Traveler's Gift.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's so good.
That's a good one.
So those are the top ones of all time. As far as right now is concerned, I don't have anything that's just one. I'm reading a book called The Familiar Stranger. It's about the Holy Spirit, reading it in the mornings when I'm spending time with Jesus. It's great, but it's a slow read.
Yeah.
You can't read 15, 20, 30 pages of it right now.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to Hormozy's new book, $100 Million Money Models, I think is what it is.
Have you read his first two?
I've read the first two.
Yeah.
So I really like him.
Yeah.
So,
awesome. Yep. Podcasts? I know you got your own, so the Owner's Table.
Yep, Owner's Table podcast. We're closing in on 100 episodes.
That's awesome.
Right now, we really enjoy that. I'm leaving here and going to shoot an episode with Cal Tinsley, who owns Tinsley Performance over in Pelham.
Yeah.
A friend of ours. And but I'm really similar to you. We batch them together. And, you know, you probably don't make money on this at all. Probably lose money. But the relationships we make on doing a podcast and the things we learn are priceless.
Yeah.
And so that's why we do it.
And it's fun. It's a relationship business, right?
That's it. It is.
Awesome. Where can people find out more about you?
ThomasCox.co. That's our website. We've got Meal Fit and Table and Time and things like that. But if you want to reach me, ThomasCox.co is our website. And there's contact forms, numbers, all that stuff on there.
And if they want catering business, infinite banking, it's all there.
Yep. You can find it all there.
Man, thanks so much for being here.
I'm glad to be here. Thank you.
Till next time.
Bye.